Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, July 30th, 2020. Returning to the podcast this week, the hero producer, Troy Farkas. Troy, how you doing today?
I'm doing great, Buster. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. You're working from Bristol. I'm working from my home studio in New York. A lot of news to get to today. We're going to be talking with David Schoenfield, Alex Spear of the Boston Globe. Joe Kelly of the Los Angeles Dodgers was suspended 8 games as part of Major League Baseball's Dodgers-Astros punishment. This came a day after he threw behind the head of Alex Bregman and taunted Carlos Correa. Major League Baseball cited previous suspensions in Kelly's career for intentionally throwing. He was banned 6 games in 2018 while with Boston. In rendering this discipline, Kelly will appeal. Also, Dodgers manager Dave Roberts was issued a 1-game suspension, which he served on Wednesday. Astros counterpart Dusty Baker was fined an undisclosed amount. There were strong feelings around the sport about what took place with the suspension, and we're going to be talking about that with David coming up. The Dodgers and the Astros played game 2 of their series last night. In the top of the 11th inning, Mookie Betts came to the plate.
2-0 pitch. Mookie Betts swings away, lifts a fly ball to left and deep. That ball is off the wall, and Betts is delivered here in the 11th. Hernandez in to score on a Mookie Betts double that puts him in front 2-1.
Joe Davis, Spectrum Sportsnet, L.A., but the Astros tied the score in the bottom of the 11th.
There is a ball to the right side. We're tied up at 2 apiece. Carlos Correa, the RBI single. Mayfield scores. And the Astros are tied it at 2.
Todd Callis on the Astros television network. They played into the 13th inning. And this happened from a Dodger rookie.
We're tied at 2 beginning the 13th. Now the pitch. Fly ball to right field. It's deep. It's on its way. And it is gone. A home run. Edwin Rios, a 2-run shot. And the Dodgers take a 4-2 lead.
Charlie Steiner, AM 570 LA Sports. That would be the final score in 13 innings, 4-2. That leadoff, 2-run homer. It's baseball in 2020. After the game, Dusty Baker, Astros manager, reacted to the Joe Kelly suspension.
You know, I didn't think nothing about it, actually. You know, I mean, this is, the game is first and foremost. I mean, they're going to do what they're going to do, you know, regardless of, you know, what my opinions are. So, you know, I think that, you know, the punishments were fair.
The Mariners beat the Angels 10-7, but along the way, Shohei Ohtani had a nice moment for the Angels.
Here comes the pitch, and Ohtani lifts a curveball into right center field. That ball's carrying out in right center field, and that ball is out of here in right center field. Shohei Ohtani, that gives the Angels the lead in this ball game, 3-1. Showtime!
That was Terry Smith, Angels Radio, AM 830, and Justin Upton hit a milestone in the Angels' loss.
Justin hits one out toward left center field. Hit well. Kyle Lewis going back at the wall. Gone! Career home run number 300 for Justin Upton. And the Angels trail it by 1.
Now 2-for-8 in his career versus Brian Shaw. Congratulations to Justin Upton. Home run number 300. Got that cutter and didn't miss it.
That from the Angels television network. The Padres have gotten off to a good start. They were in San Francisco for the second game of that series. Mike Yastrzemski had a home run in the midst of this game, and then he came to the plate again in the bottom of the ninth.
2-2 pitch. There's a long drive, and you can forget about this one. Off into the night, headed for San Francisco Bay. This ball game is over, and Yastrzemski with a spectacular shot into the water. 7-6, the Giants have won it, and what an explosion that was.
How great is it to hear my old friend John Miller on KNBR, to hear his voice? Yeah, so they went 7-6. Mike Yastrzemski having himself a night. The Red Sox and the Mets, this was a crazy game. The Red Sox pitching, of course, has been an absolute mess. They had a 6-4 lead going into the ninth inning. And the Mets threatened, they loaded the bases, and then this happened.
He delivers 0-1, swing and a fly ball, center field, shallow, back goes Peraza, he grabs it, and the Red Sox have won it. A little blooper, and when that left the bat, it looked like it could have been a blue pit that would have won it.
That was Joe Castiglione, WEI 93.7 FM. Great to hear his voice as well. Some other news. Jeff Passan reporting that in a memo sent to teams Tuesday, Major League Baseball encouraged players not to leave hotels in road cities except for games, mandated the use of surgical masks instead of cloth masks during travel, and required every team to travel with a compliance officer who ensures players and staff properly follow the league's protocols. Major League Baseball is mulling seven-inning doubleheader games, and that may happen as soon as this weekend. You've got the Blue Jays and the Phillies scheduled to play a doubleheader on Saturday. Look, in this year, they're making it up as they go, and so we might be seeing seven-inning games in doubleheaders as they try to do the best as they can with the schedule. Before we begin today's show, of course, baseball is back. The NBA returns tonight, and then this weekend, we've got golf's first major of the season. And guess what? You can get exclusive coverage of the PGA Championship August 6th through 9th on ESPN and ESPN+. And since a lot of you out there are probably missing golf, we at ESPN Audio teamed up with our friends at the PGA to give you all something big to look forward to in 2021. This is your chance to win a VIP experience of the 2021 PGA Championship at the world-class Kiawa Island Golf Resort. The four-day, three-night grand prize package includes round-trip air and hotel at the Sanctuary, a five-star oceanfront hotel on the island, two tickets to the PGA Chalet, and two pairs of Wanamaker Club tickets, two free one-year-long subscriptions to ESPN Plus, where you can stream live coverage of featured holes every weekend. Win a year of exclusive live sports, originals, and more with ESPN Plus. For your chance to win, go to www.espnradiosweeps.com to enter now through August 11th. Limit to one entry. One grand prize winner will be selected. Visit www.espnradiosweeps.com for official rules.
Welcome to the show!
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 Welcome to the show, mate!
Welcome to the show! Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby!
You're in the show with David Schoenfield.
And David, a lot of days, you know, you're kind of trying to figure out, okay, what are we going to talk about today? I don't think that's the case today. We got a lot to dive into. Start off with the Joe Kelly suspension. What do you think?
Look, I know people are not happy. Players around the sport are not happy. An 8-game suspension over 60 games is equal to about 21 over 162. That's a lot. But I agree with you, Buster. I've seen you on TV. I think the commissioner had to send a message, and I know the extenuating circumstances here are there. They're big. They're important, but in my opinion, you can't have players thrown at heads, even at the heads of cheaters. I'm not surprised at the length. I think it's warranted.
I was absolutely surprised. It was the idiot on television yesterday morning. They were like, what do you think is going to happen? I said, well, you know, Major League Baseball always follows what happens from the umpires. And the umpires didn't even warn Joe Kelly when he was actually out on the mound. That's how they've handled it. As you know, typically with relief pitchers, you know, you get maybe two to five. The most egregious offenses are like 5 games. And he winds up, as you say, getting the equivalent of 21 games. I know the Dodgers were last night, they were furious, angry about the fact that, you know, the suspension was long within the context of the 60-game season, angry because Joe didn't actually hit either Alex Bregman or Carlos Correa. They were angry about the fact that Dave Roberts got a suspension for a game, and Dusty Baker, who could be heard on the field mics, yelling at Joe Kelly. The reaction that I heard was, wait, you're talking about inciting? What are you kidding? What was Dusty Baker doing? But I thought about it, you know, last night. My biggest criticism of Rob Manfred back to 2017, I wrote this at the time, I thought he totally blew it back then with the Apple Watch situation, Yankees and Red Sox. Because he didn't come down with the hammer and say, this is not going to be something that we're going to accept. You're not going to use electronics to steal signs. If you do it, you're going to get kicked out of baseball. And because he didn't do it, what happened? The Houston Astros just continued along. We've had more incidents. And then we have this big mess that they're trying to clean up in 2020. So I think from his perspective, he came down with something that he really hopes alters behavior.
Yeah, I agree. And look, the Dodgers should be mad. You know, this is one of those things where kind of all sides are correct. But I'm with you. Baseball blew it in 2017. The Astros were doing what they thought they could get away with. And let's be honest, they probably weren't the only team. They're the ones who ultimately got caught, and we're all glad they did ultimately get caught. And that title is forever tainted. But to me, this is the only way to stop it now. We can't go through the rest of this season having ticked off opponents, throwing at Alex Bregman and Carlos Correa. So Joe Kelly kind of takes the fall for every other pitcher in the league, I think.
Yeah, and boy, you're right about people being mad around the sport. Yeah. I got a text from someone in the game last night said, if I hear one more person feeling sorry for the Astros, what are you kidding? But the line in the sand has been drawn on the back of Joe Kelly, that's for sure. All right, we got word from the Associated Press yesterday that Major League Baseball Player Association are talking about seven-inning doubleheaders. it makes me chuckle. You know, I feel like that anyone who's looking for a strong standard about what baseball should be statistically in 2020, just look the other way. This is the outlier year, and seven-inning doubleheaders, why not do it? You know, Matt Klentak, the general manager of the Phillies, was on a Zoom call with the reporters yesterday and mentioned, well, you know, we might have that in place by the time we get to Saturday. That's where we are.
Yeah, and I know there's, you know, I saw Adam Ottavino of the Yankees was against it, saying, well, my role might not come into effect, you know, because he's usually that guy pitching those middle innings. Teams will be able to skip over those guys, go straight to their eighth and ninth inning guys. But I guess I would say for teams like the Phillies and the Marlins, who've had all these games canceled and presumably will have to have a bunch of doubleheaders, I think it's a little more fair to them, you know, to get through the season. Of course, you could argue it's an advantage because they won't have to use as much of their bullpen in those games. But again, like you said, Buster, nothing's normal about this year. This doesn't mean we're going to have seven inning games, you know, in 2021. For this year, I'm okay with it.
Well, and we're seeing every day this huge rash of injuries around the sport.
Yeah.
And it's clear from talking with, you know, managers and with coaches. Yeah, you have your Garrett Cole, who looks like he could throw nine innings in a World Series game right now. But a lot of pitchers are not up to speed and guys are getting hurt. And why expose them to extra innings? I had a general manager say to me the other day, you know, why ram through the old standard of how things are should be done in this crazy year? And I think that if they go to the seven-inning doubleheaders, which I expect they're going to do, it's going to be an effort to protect the players. And shoot, these guys coming up through the minor leagues, that's how they do it in doubleheaders.
Yeah, right. College baseball, minor leagues. And look, I actually threw this out talking to one of our editors. I think they might need to keep the rosters at 30 players all year. You know, they're supposed to cut down to 28 after 15 days. And then down to 26 with no expanded rosters in September. At this point, I would keep it at 30. Let's try to limit that shuffling back and forth. And like you said, help the pitchers as much as possible for this odd season.
Oh, I cringe, though, because you would agree with me that what we're seeing now is September baseball with a parade of relievers.
I know.
But you're right. This is to protect the players in the same vein that the seven-inning doubleheaders would. So I get why they would do that. Jeff Passan reported overnight that there is ramped-up protocol being in place. They're going to essentially have the hall monitor on every team to make sure that the players are adhering to the health and safety protocol. There's no precedent for any of this, you know, and it was clear that through experience that holes would be exposed like it apparently happened with the Marlins. So that absolutely makes sense to me. How about you?
Yeah, no, it does. And I was kind of trying to skim through that manual last night, and there's a lot of rules in place there. And I'm pretty sure there's a lot of rules that the Marlins weren't following to get to their point, unfortunately. So yeah, we can try. I wrote this as kind of like walking on a tightrope through a hurricane. The odds of us making it through this entire season might be slim, but at least having a hall monitor might help at least a little bit.
I've been really interested, you know, to hear the evolution of thought since the Marlins thing happened as more information, you know, gets disseminated around baseball, you and I don't know how much of it is actually real. Yeah. But there are a lot of stories going around about the Marlins and how they got to this point. And on Monday, when the Marlins thing happened, there was initially fear. You heard that in the voice of Dave Martinez. And more, and I almost feel like, because you got, you know, 1,500 competitors are involved in this thing, and they're like, wait, they couldn't figure that out. They couldn't follow the rules. And it's gone from being concerned about whether or not they can make this work to now, yeah, we can make it work. It was just a stupid team. Like, it was a bunch of dumb players. And there's real anger toward the Marlins within the other clubs, which is interesting to me.
Yeah.
And you get the feeling that there is, you know, clearly among the owners, among with Rob Manfred, he's putting his head down, you know, damn the Torpedoes, full steam ahead, try to make this work. And I think that some players really feel that way, too.
Well, yeah, and we'll see the results of the investigation, I guess. I mean, you'll know if this is going to be made public. But, yeah, the fact that apparently we've had no other positive tests since Friday from the other teams tells me – I hate to speculate, but it seems like this wasn't necessarily passed among the Marlins at the stadium. But we don't know. That's the thing. We need the investigation. The other 29 teams seem to be making it work, at least so far. So, yeah, let's find out what the Marlins did. And, yeah, let's find out if it was a stupid team that did not follow any of the protocols.
A lot of stories going around. None of them charitable, I can tell you that.
Yeah,
all right,
that's for sure.
Let's get to the baseball stuff. How about this guy for the Toronto Blue Jays last night, Nate Pearson? Give a listen.
And Pearson about to throw his 58th pitch. 97 as he dials it up a notch or two.
See, that's one thing velocity will do for you. When you're in a jam like this, you can reach back for a little extra. This is where velocity plays. Plus the fact that they have to honor that, and then the slider becomes more effective.
And he got him. 99 at the knees to freeze him. And Pearson gets out of it.
99 at the knees. That, of course, from the Toronto Blue Jays television network. We have my old friends Dan Schulman and Buck Martinez. That was fun.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing more enjoyable than watching a hard-throwing young pitcher.
Yeah, a little. I mean, he looks like he's 12 years old. He's got a baby face, but he's not built like a baby. What is he, 6'4", 240, 250? Looked really, really good. The thing that impressed me, he was able to move that fastball around to both corners. He throws mostly up in the zone. That highlight, he's hitting at the knees. He has a nice tight slider. And then the second time through the order, he throws in a couple changeups. You know, good luck hitting an 88 mile an hour changeup after a 99 mile an hour fastball. I mean, what did he say after the game? I belong here. He does.
I love that. He said that.
Yeah, he was billed as an ace and he looked like one.
Boy, and his personality absolutely plays at the big league level. Like, he is just bubbling over with confidence and personality. And the Duke Blue Jays are going to be so much fun.
Oh, I know. Yep, they are.
With all those great young players. Okay, give me some stuff that's jumping out at you so far.
Well, we had another debut last night. He had pitched one game in relief, but his first start, Christian Javier of the Astros, filling in for Justin Verlander. This kid, not anywhere near the prospect, supposedly, that Nate Pearson is, but man, he looked really good. He doesn't throw as hard, mostly in the low 90s, but he varies his fastball from the upper 80s to 94. Nice curveball is kind of an off-speed pitch. He had the Dodgers totally confused. Look, the statistical resume for this kid's outstanding. Third highest strikeout rate in the minors last year. I think he looked really, really good as well. So the Astros might be able to survive without Verlander here for a few weeks.
And you mentioned the changing of speeds. It's been interesting in the last couple of years as we've gone into the era of driveline with all these pitchers pumping up velocity, hearing a lot more from the old schoolers like, you know what, we're forgetting about guys who know how to pitch and who know how to change speeds and do those things. And, you know, one of our first broadcasts this year, we had the Cubs and the Brewers, and Kyle Hendricks was the epitome of that.
Yep.
You know, throwing 85 miles an hour and throwing curveballs and mixing around. And I think that we always talk about the, you know, the inefficiencies in the market and the undervalued assets. More and more I hear from the old school is they feel like that an undervalued asset now is somebody who can pitch like that kid could yesterday against the Dodgers.
Yeah, you know, Buster, I've been thinking about that a lot lately, especially we see all these relievers come in trying to throw as hard as they can, and they have no command. A lot of them don't even have a good secondary pitch. So, yeah, watching Javier last night, it was really fun. Mike Soroka of the Braves, he pitched last night. Wasn't quite as great as his opener. He's like that, you know, throws a 92-mile-an-hour sinker. Has a great curveball, delivery is a little hard to pick up the ball. I love watching these guys because you're right, they know how to pitch. Javier, first major league start, looks like he just has that innate feel to pitching. Don't want to overreact. It's one game, but he looked really good.
David, thanks for doing this.
All right. Thanks a lot.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Alex Spear covers the Boston Red Sox for the Boston Globe. And Alex, how you doing today?
Doing okay, Buster. Thanks very much for asking. How are you?
Hanging in there. Thanks for joining us. You know, as I was preparing my segment with you and thinking about the Red Sox and what's going on, here's what came to mind. Give a listen.
That escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
Yeah, this is a team that less than 2 years ago, they was the greatest Red Sox team ever, setting records all over the place. And now, as I'm watching this, they look like one of the worst teams in baseball. How did that happen so quickly, Alex? To give you a really impossible question.
It is extraordinary. I mean, it is dizzying. The degree of transition that's happened in the organization over the course of the last two, you know, not even 2 years at this point, when you think about October of 2018, is pretty staggering. You have a change in terms of who's in charge of the baseball operations department with Dave Dombrowski gone, Chaim Bloomin. You have a change in manager. You have a change in almost the entirety of the pitching staff as a result of injuries, trades, you know, free agency departures. It is a drastically different place, and I think that the pitching is the thing, and that's the one where it's an almost unrecognizable group at this time, just because there's been so much turnover, the Sale injury, the fact that Eddie Rodriguez contracted COVID-19 and then had myocarditis on top of it, and so, you know, and David Price being traded has put the pitching staff in this very strange spot where, you know, the only recognizable person is Nate Eovaldi and then, you know, a couple of the guys at the back end of the bullpen. It feels like there's been there's a bit of a dart throwing that's happening in terms of the assembly of the pitching staff, given the frequency of the of waiver moves and, you know, and minor league free agent signings and guys being brought in and hoping to find something that works. That's a formula that works, that has worked over time in Tampa Bay. If you look at, you know, Tampa Bay's performance over the last decade where Chaim Bloom was, they're always a really good second half team, or almost always. In the aggregate, they're way better in the second half than the first half. The problem is this is a season with a really short runway, and so all of that turnover, you wonder whether or not there's time for it all to gel in the course of this compressed schedule.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, I thought going into the year that it was going to be tough for them one way or the other, especially after, you know, Chris Sale went down. But big picture, you know, from 30,000 feet, looking at it off into the future, what's increasingly concerning me is how long it's going to take them to find bedrock. Because Chris Sale, you know, not only misses this year, he could be dramatically affected for next year. We don't really know what Eduardo Rodriguez's status is going to be going forward. You know, is this going to be something that might affect him? And then if you look at Chaim Bloom's history of developing pitching staffs, the Rays will keep, you know, their best prospects developing in the minor leagues for a really long time. And the Red Sox are not a team that's teeming with great pitching prospects. And on top of that, you raise the standard by the fact that they're in the American League East with the Yankees, with this really talented Toronto Blue Jays team, with the Rays, who are using the same system that Heim presumably will implement here, except they're years ahead. And just in the last week, I begin to wonder, like, boy, when is the turnaround happen? What about you?
Yeah, there's clearly a problem because of where they are in terms of the short-term pitching staff, and because there is that gap in the upper levels of the farm system. There's not that kind of, you know, top 50 pitching prospect who has reached the upper levels at this point. One thing that the Rays were very good at, have been very good at, is maximizing the ability of the prospects that they do have and making them perform well beyond the projections that anyone had. Like, Ryan Yarbrough wasn't supposed to be a really, really good starter in anyone's projections, but they figured out ways of maximizing what he was. So that's the task that now faces Chaim Bloom and the Red Sox over the next couple of years, getting past this hump where they're kind of having this open audition for starting pitching spots with guys who weren't in the organization 1 week before the start of the regular season in this very weird compressed schedule scenario. It's incumbent on the Red Sox to figure out ways of taking guys like Brian Mata and like Tanner Houck and like Thad Ward, who was going to be in Double A this year, guys who are probably maybe who you project to be in the big leagues sometime in 2021, and figuring out ways of maximizing their skills, surrounding them with the bullpen pieces so that you can get something good. But you can't just it's difficult to sweep everything under the rug. It is a pretty significant challenge that faces them in terms of building out that pitching infrastructure. They'll have financial latitude, theoretically, we think, obviously there's a lot of unknowns with the financial situation of every team in the middle of the pandemic, but they should be able to start making some moves throughout this offseason and game planning for them in a way that they weren't last offseason, when they were only able to make the Dodgers trade right before the start of spring training. So they have a lot of work to do. I guess that's a good way of putting it. And their fortunes for the next couple of years are going to depend a lot on how they go about that work.
I kind of wonder, too, if the ugliness of what we're seeing now will nudge them to being more aggressive with the turnover. Guys like Brandon Workman, Matt Barnes would be natural candidates to potentially trade midseason. But I watching that game against the Mets last night, I was thinking to myself, now that you have a universal DH, and you know you're probably not going to be good for a couple of years, it might behoove the Red Sox to start sending out feelers to other teams. Look, J.D. Martinez, what can we talk about with him? Other veteran players to facilitate this rebuilding process, which, you know, they're really close to the beginning of. What do you think?
I think that they're definitely going to be open-minded about trading virtually anyone on the roster. Maybe you would kind of wall off Rafael Devers and Xander Bogaerts as the two guys who are that kind of those kind of cornerstones that you mentioned. And so I think that they'll certainly have to listen on Martinez. The difficulty for them is that, of course, this isn't just there is a 16-team playoff field this year, right? So, like, even if they look bad over the course of a couple of games, they still have that opportunity to maintain some interest, right? They keep talking, people in baseball keep talking about the obligation they have to provide entertainment to regions that have been decimated and, you know, emotionally, psychology, to provide something meaningful. And so to go all in for a rebuild in the first few weeks of the season, that's tricky. Nonetheless, I do expect that they're going to have to listen to offers on J.D. Martinez at a time when the market for his services is probably going to be greater than it was certainly last offseason and last season. So, yes, I think that they have to be open-minded and kind of clear-eyed about where they are, who they are, what they need moving forward. And, Chaim Bloom was brought in with a mandate, essentially, or certainly carte blanche, to be able to trade just about anyone. He already traded Mookie Betts. So I think that we know that that there's a strong stomach for change.
2 minutes, two more for you. Xander Bogaerts is one of the most positive people you meet in baseball. So he was really telling the other day when after a game he was noting the problems with the pitching. His quote was, we were down 7-0, and we just kind of chip, 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 and this is showing the offense we have. Obviously, we've got guys who haven't been swinging the way we know we can. That's going to change. His team is just built so good offensively. We've proven we can come back. We're capable of doing that. Then he paused and he added, I mean, if you've got to score 8, 9, 10 runs every game, I honestly think it's a little tough. That felt like a window into the clubhouse for me when I read that. What about for you?
Well, the clubhouse, such as it is, one of the things that we have difficult time making sense of is how a team forms its identity and kind of does come together in the middle of this time. But yeah, when you hear Xander Bogaerts being kind of that despondent, he's a wonderfully candid person and is willing to say what's true rather than what's necessarily politic. But yeah, so when Xander says something about the psychological state of the team and the challenges that it's facing, that's pretty telling.
Last one, Tom Werner over the weekend, you know, he kind of took a shot at the Dodgers. He noted in the aftermath of the Mookie Betts contract, he noted that the Red Sox have won 4 championships, and he noted that the Dodgers haven't won any. What was your take on that?
I mean, look, there's a bit of defensiveness around the Red Sox. I think that he's pointing out the fact that there's a long-term track record of pretty remarkable success in the 21st century, and they've been willing to make some hard decisions that at the time had a lot of blowback, but in the end ended up yielding some pretty good results. I think that speaks to the fact that the Red Sox owner at the ownership level and at the executive level recognize that, you know, this isn't an easy time for where the organization is, but their ability to adjust, adapt, and remain flexible. You know, one of the reasons why they traded Mookie Betts was to maintain organizational flexibility. They believe that, you know, that they're well served by that and that they've taken advantage of that in the past. And so they want people to trust in that track record, even though, you know, the optics of trading Mookie Betts right before spring training, that's going to hover over the team through its struggles.
All right, Alex, great catching up with you. I wish you could see you and have a good conversation, but who knows when that's going to happen. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, you too, Buster. Good to talk. Thanks.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Bleacher Tweets.
All right, Buster, a couple Bleacher Tweets for you this morning, which I'm honored to be back to be reading. The first one this morning comes from Danny Sudatic. I apologize, Danny, if I mispronounced that. At DSuds24 wants to know, hey, Buster, do you feel that the anger against the Astros will ramp back up again next year when fans are allowed back into the stands and when Houston will be playing the other divisions for the first time?
Yeah, to some degree. Look, I felt this way. I don't know if you do too, Troy, but I feel like as soon as the Astros thing happened, that's something that they're going to have on their, you know, it's like the letter A on their jerseys, right? The scarlet letter A. That's just something that's going to always be following them in their careers. You know, Jose Altuve is going to be in his last year in the big leagues. George Springer, Bregman. That's just the way it goes. Fans are not going to forget.
Correct. Yeah, baseball fans especially love to hold on to things. And I also wonder if they're, who knows where we'll be at this time next year during the season. Will we be at a point where we can have fans in the stands? So that, I don't even know. Next one comes from P.K. Steinberg, at P.K. Steinberg, of course. After a week of baseball, what are you hearing from players, coaches, and colleagues about the implementation of the universal designated hitter?
Generally speaking, they really like it. You know, there certainly are pitchers. You know, Madison Bumgarner is probably grinding his teeth Adam Wainwright, because they can't don't get the opportunity to hit. There's something that they have a lot of fun with. But I think by and large, people understood that this was a change that was imminent. And now that it's in place, I think it's been seamless. And I like the idea. I was talking with Alex Speer about, you know, J.D. Martinez, when he was a free agent a few years ago, his market was 14 teams, not 30 teams, because he's viewed as mostly a DH type guy. And Troy, I kind of like the idea that, you know, guys like J.D. Martinez now have more places where he can land.
Yeah, I don't
Nelson
mind.
Nelson Cruz.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't mind it at all. And I mean, I think across sports, if there's anything to be good taken out of everything that's going on, is that you can force changes. You can basically do them as beta tests to see how they go. And you, and if it doesn't work, you can just say, oh, we had to adjust on the fly, we'll go back. But if they actually do end up working these changes, like the universal designated hitter, maybe it can stick around long term. So it'll be interesting to see. Final one this morning, Warren McCauley at Warren McCauley. Hey, Buster, if the final out in an extra inning isn't made by the batter, for example, like they're caught stealing, who starts the next inning on second base?
And, Warren, I haven't asked anyone official about what might happen with this, but I absolutely believe that it would be the same as the rules we have in place now during a regular game or a regular situation, where if a guy's thrown out stealing and there's the, you know, the batter who's standing in the batter's box will lead off the next inning. That would be my assumption. And the last guy, you know, the guy who was up before that would be the guy that you'd place at second base.
Yeah, Buster, like you said, they're making it up on the fly. Thank you for the creative Bleacher tweets this morning. Keep them coming every day, all day long. Hashtag Bleacher tweets.
Now, Troy, before we go, last year we had so much fun with the friend zone with you. I need an update on that before we move forward.
So me and said friends had a bit of a falling out because I confronted the friend about the friend zone predicament, and we're not very close anymore.
Okay. So at least it's resolved in your mind.
It's resolved, yes. I am at peace. I've moved on. I'm now looking forward to future friend zones.
Okay, good. Yeah, not the future friend zones. I'm good it's resolved, at least this one. But those are things that if you have a habit of falling into the friend zone, it's probably not going to be the last time. Thanks, Troy. My thanks also to David Schoenfield and Alex Speer. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.